Welcome back. If you aren't already following Naked, please take a minute to do so so you don't miss out on any future episodes. Each follow means so much and it actually helps a lot. If you have more than just a minute, it would be absolutely incredible if you could leave a review and maybe even share an episode with a friend. I'm relatively new to the pod world, especially new to the things that are important in the podcasting world. And apparently reviews and follows are up there on the list of importance. So I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this. Welcome back to Naked. If you are somebody who listens frequently or you tune in weekly, you've noticed we have had a little less episodes coming out recently, but we are back at it. We are going to be uploading a podcast weekly, so you can look forward to that. I've met some incredible people in our journeys as we've been in Spain and Italy, and just so excited to bring these stories to you. So look forward to the weekly updates coming in from now on. Our current guest today, I am so excited and just delighted to have her on the podcast. We met a couple years ago in Nicaragua, and she was such an inspiration to us. We were able to be a part of her non-for-profit, what she's doing there in Nicaragua. And she shares about that journey and how she came to Nicaragua and how it changed her initially, just being in a different space, a different lifestyle, really different world compared to where she's come from. And then during a really difficult time for many of us during the pandemic, her eye was open to something that she was like, oh my gosh, I want to help with this and I want to get uncomfortable. So she got really uncomfortable and she started something that I think you'll find really inspiring. She is now a mom of two twin baby girls, and so she's navigating the world of being a new mom and running her nonprofit and just really just stretching herself in all ways, and I find her so inspiring. We had an amazing chat. So I'm so excited you're here today to hear her story. You'll notice there's some roosters and some dogs and noise and chickens and stuff in the background in this episode. Just embrace it. She lives in Nicaragua, so there is a ton of wildlife that is just amongst. So that's just a part of our story today and part of the episode. So enjoy the nature that's a part of this journey and the birds and everything that's happening in the background. And again, welcome here and thank you so much for being a part of this community. Welcome to Naked, where stories unfold. I'm your host, Janelle, a once former pastor's wife who exchanged small town living for a nomadic life. The unexpected change in our life led my husband and our four kids to traveling the world. From years of being rooted in our small town to the thrill of wandering the world, our story has been anything but ordinary. On our journeys, we've met amazing people, learned their way of life, and heard their unique stories, which has led me to understand the profound impact of shared experiences. In each episode, we explore moments of transformation, guided by one single question. Is there a time in your life when everything changed? We invite ordinary storytellers like yourself to share the often unexpected turns in life. So grab a seat and settle in. This is the Naked Podcast. Well, thank you so much for being here today. Like I've told many people who follow us and listen to our stories, that we travel. And so we meet the most amazing people as we travel. And one of the things we love to do as a family is find ways to give back into communities, which is how I met my guest today named Delaney, who runs and owns SOS in Nicaragua and was such a highlight of our time while we were in that area, just being able to be with all the animals and the cats and the dogs and whatever needed to be done there. And since then, we've had a way to kind of keep connected. Our daughter is still in Nicaragua, so Delaney knows her. And I just was so interested when I met them. I was like, I'm really interested to know how life brought you here. And since then, many more things have happened in your world and you guys have expanded and grown. So maybe before we get started, you can tell us a little bit about where life has you at this current moment in your journey.
Sure. Thank you for having me, Janelle. I'm excited to be here. So currently, I'm here in my home in Nicaragua in San Juan del Sur. I have 6-month-old twin girls, identical girls. They are taking a nap at the moment. So we're hoping that continues through the podcast. Yeah. the SOS Animales Nicaragua is the rescue that me and my partner Marley started, and we also have Seaside Clinic of Veterinaria, which kind of hosts the rescue until we can expand and create our own full rescue center. So that's what's going on in my life.
Wow.
Right now.
So you guys are expanding on all any levels with your with growing little people.
All levels. Yeah. Little people, animal rescues. It's we're just like exploding in all directions.
Wow. And how I haven't had a chance to talk to you about this, but how have you found the launch into motherhood? Like, I mean, you've done it in a way that many of us haven't. I don't know if there's a way like you can put that into a little package, or maybe that's for another podcast.
Totally. You know, I haven't quite been able to package it myself, mentally, emotionally, physically. As you know, being a mother yourself of four. Why do I think you have more than that? Why do I think that? I just, every time I see your photos and videos, there's just always like humans.
So around. Many. Yes.
So many humans. As you know, motherhood is beautiful and challenging and, you know, a lot of inner work, a lot of external work. And,
totally.
It is, ongoing, and there's no break in it. And with twins, I don't know any different besides twins, but I do often say to myself, wow, this might be so much easier if it was just one.
I think it definitely is.
Yeah, there's times where just, you know, we'll be like putting them to sleep, and you know, it can't just be one of us putting them to sleep. It's my husband and I. And it's like, man, if this one wasn't crying to wake this one up, and then this one wakes that one up, and then it goes on for 2 hours, like, this would just be so much easier. But I love them. They're so cute, which I think, you know, after a long night of not sleeping, you just look at them and you're like, oh, you're so cute. You're so worth it. Like that little smile just like lit up my world.
Totally.
I do think, though, being a new mother, I don't know if any other mothers feel this way, is I feel a little sense of imposter syndrome. Like, you know, I have the label of mom the day they were born, or as some people, you know, might think, like, while they're in the womb as well. But I don't, like, when I look in the mirror, I'm like, oh, I don't see mom. And I don't feel mom. I feel this deep connection to them, and I know they're mine, and I'm theirs. But it's just that label that I feel like is kind of this imposter syndrome. I don't know. It's just a funny thing to me. Like, I look at my mother and I'm like, oh, you're a mom. You're a mom. I look at other moms, I'm like, yes, you're a mom, and you're a mom. And I look at myself, I'm like, are you a mom? Really? But anyways, yeah, I am.
I can understand that. I think that feeling can come in waves. Even Greg and I are talking about our kids growing up and like now moving on. And you're like, sometimes I think I'm like, am I a mom like to a 22-year-old? Like, is that even possible? You know, like, I don't feel like a mom like of a 22-year-old. Like I'm like, they're catching up to me, and I'm like, in some ways it feels like we're meeting in the middle somewhere,
right?
Like they're just catching up to you, and you're like, I don't feel like I'm in my 40s even, you know. Like I always say to my kids every year that goes on, I'm like, oh, I'm like, I'm celebrating my 14th year of my 28th and it's like birthday, like it's my anniversary of my 28th year again, you know. I just feel like, I don't know, there is a thing, I think, because when we think of mothers or grandmothers, we think of our mothers or our grandmothers.
Yes,
we don't like see ourselves in that, and so it's a different. And there's so much learning in being a mom, and I, even now, as their kids are really like, I thought it was a lot, but you just realize it just never ends. Like I remember mom saying to me, like, I'm still learning how to be a mom, and you guys are like in your 30s, just still learning how to. Now it's my first time being a mom to somebody who's turning 30, you know, and that's what she's like, you just never stop learning. It's just this constant season that you're just, it's just different, you know, like it's
that's a great perspective. Learning. You don't think of that, because you think of like, oh, you know, after the age of 18 or something, your momming is over in a way, and they are adults and they go do their own thing. But yeah, it's a different phase of motherhood. And learning how to be a mother of that age of a human, and where their life is at. That's That's interesting. Yeah, I still sometimes think that I'm 33. I had to think about that, but I still am like, wow, I feel almost too young to be a mom. Like in my brain, I still feel like I'm maybe mid-20s, like 10 years ago. And I'm like, no, like I'm not prepared for this. Although, yes, you know, the babies were, a baby was planned. Babies was more of a surprise, but it was a plan all around. But both my husband and I think, like, we're still kids ourselves. Like, what are we doing?
Right?
I don't know.
I don't know if that feeling ever leaves, to be honest with you.
Okay, that's good.
I think they're just like, when we were talking to Greg's grandma, she was 99, and we're like, Grandma, how old do you feel? She's like, I feel about 27 in my brain.
No.
Like, yeah. She's like, we're like, what? She's like, yeah, like, in my head, I still feel very, very young. And I'm like, okay, I guess it just never goes away.
I love that. No, that, maybe that's how it's supposed to be.
Right? You're just like, we're always just kids being, you know, I say, well, we did start really, really young. I had my first at 22. And, you know, so was it really a kid just raising a kid? I had no idea what I was doing. But I realized that it doesn't really matter where you start, what age you start. You really are just stumbling.
You have no idea. You have, like, no matter how many baby books, how many classes you go to. Like, Grant and I read all the baby books. We did all the things. Yeah. We have no idea what we're doing. Every day we ask each other, well, should we try this? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, what if we do it this way? I have no idea. Like, every day.
Yeah.
Every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's forever.
Anyway, sometimes we think, like, our poor children, like, they're just kind of guinea pigs. But I guess everyone is a guinea pig.
Yeah. Yeah. And even when you have, like, four kids, they're all so different. So it's like, what worked for the first one, you're like, this totally worked. And you do it for the second one, like, this totally did not work. And then you have another one, like, this is another one. It's like, there's just no manual for each kid. You're just learning because they all have different little quirks.
Yeah,
you know, like
totally.
Some babies are really colicky and some aren't sleepers and some are heavy eaters.
Yeah.
And some cut teeth early. And
they're so different. Even the girls, even though they're identical, same age, they're so very, very different.
Really, hey.
And yeah, their patterns and habits are their personalities. They're just two different little humans that look the exact same.
Wow. Do you ever get them mixed up?
Or yes.
Did you in the beginning?
We know for sure after you look at them for a little bit, you're like, okay, you are you and you are you. But from afar, like if my husband Grant is holding both of them and they're both in the same outfit and he's like turning them around, I'm like, oh God, give me a second. Like, give me a second. Once one of them smiles or giggles, you know they're different. But
you know who they are, yeah.
It's hard.
That's so cute. Wow. Well, I've enjoyed watching your journey. And like, I think about you a lot, especially because I've seen you do the travels, but also because I know the kind of heat that you're in. And for those of you who don't know Nicaragua heat, it is so hot, whether it's raining or it's sunny. It's just the air is heavy and you're just kind of dripping sweat when you're just really standing still or sitting. There's really no even need for an activity to burst out in the sweat. It's just happening.
Nothing. Always. It's just here with us always.
Yeah. It's just always with you.
Fan or air conditioning, always on you.
Always going. Yeah. So I think about you and like, wow, like you are no, and also running a business and like you're such a trooper doing everything that you're doing. So
I commend
you in that. And I see you from across the world and all the things you're doing as a mom.
Thank you.
It's a lot. So yeah, no. But I have to ask, what are you drinking? Because I always love that part of
I have coffee and oat milk. Nothing excited. And my little I got cups made for our baby shower. It says the Griffin Girls on it.
Oh, that's cute.
What are you drinking over there?
Okay, well, my ice has melted now since I put it in here, but it's an iced chai with oat milk.
Oh, nice. Milk,
but yeah, I found like a Marsala chai here, like condensed version. So it's very good.
There's
like
stuff.
No sweetener in it. It's the good stuff. Yeah, so I'm enjoying that. But I guess now we get to unfold into like the beautiful story of you, which is like the part that is, I find, so honoring. Again, thank you for being here. And people say yes, I'm just like, really? And you were so eager. You're like, totally, I will. I was like, oh my God, much, really? Like, I just, it really means a lot to me, because I know from my own journey of sharing my story by myself on here from the first podcast, I was like sweating and I was like, I don't know what I'm going to say. And it was overwhelming. But I love that when people are open and are like, yeah, sure, I'll join Naked. The part of me. So what in your, I say this every time, because there's so many parts in our stories where everything changed, but for you today, what part of your story comes to mind when you think about the time in your life when everything changed?
I feel like there's been a few deep shifts. The first one being when we moved down to Nicaragua in 2017. That was when our entire lives changed, definitely. That changed our marriage. It changed our lifestyle. It changed what was important to us. That was a pretty big shift. And I thought that that was going to maybe be the biggest shift of, you know, my life in that era. But I was not prepared for what was coming. So yes, moving down to Nicaragua in 2017 was a big shift. We had decided, just to kind of put it in a nutshell, I had traveled in my early 20s and fell in love with travel. And I lived in Copenhagen, Denmark for a little while and played on a women's soccer team and just like had a blast and traveled and just, you know, ran with it. Right. And, and then came back and I promised myself, like, I'm going to go live abroad again. And when I'm, you know, more adult, whatever that meant.
Yeah.
And so, and my husband had never left. His first passport was when we moved to Nicaragua. So he had never left the United States. Yeah. I was just like, hey, you want to do this? He was like, okay, cool. So I was like, all right, you just hold tight there, sir. You're in for a ride. But we were both working from home. I had a health coaching company and I was teaching yoga and he is a freelance illustrator. So we were both working from home and we're like, why not? We planned for 2 years leaving the country and we're like, 2 years, we'll be gone. We'll come back.
Okay.
It's been seven. Wow. So we're not going back.
Yeah.
But we just kind of made a list. Everyone always asks, like, what made you choose Nicaragua? And I think we had never visited. We kind of made a list of what we wanted. We wanted something. We wanted to learn a new language. We wanted to live on the beach. We'd never lived on the beach before. We wanted to move somewhere that was close enough to visit our family. Where it was, you know, if something needed to happen, we could leave quickly and be back in the U.S. We wanted something dog friendly, so we were bringing our dog. We wanted just a very different culture than what we grew up with. So we kind of, I don't know, I looked up a few blogs and I was like, this looks cool. And our intention was like, we had two suitcases, two backpacks and our dog. We sold everything else. And our idea was like, if we hate it, in 6 months, we'll keep moving south and we'll just keep going and, you know, eventually be back. And we came here and we're like, oh yeah, no, this feels right. This feels good. And it's been, it'll be 7 years in October. But I thought that that was a big shift, and it was huge. It has changed the way I view everything in the world. And my perspective has shifted and my gratitude has shifted and what's important to me has shifted into more of a life of simplicity and I don't know, to me, just a deeper understanding of people. Without the hustle and bustle to kind of blind you into the reality of human to human contact and slowing down. And I don't know, that's kind of what Nicaragua has brought. But it was,
about that. So when you're talking about like this idea, you're in the US and you pop the question, like, hey, do you want to go do this thing? And your partner's like, yeah, let's do it. What was it in you that transpired this idea of, like, was it the fact that you had traveled and you're like, no, I want to do more of that? Or what was the point where everything for you actually had the courage? Cause you know, you have a lot of thoughts in your mind and heart that you don't bring up and you're like, that's maybe not a thing I should bring up, you know, but it actually, you did, and it ended up happening. So what was the thing behind, what was like the charge behind that for you?
It was a few years before we moved. I guess it was probably 2015. And I was a wedding planner for 8 years. And I was working with just some fun staff. And this one guy was like, yeah, me and my girlfriend are going to go move to New Zealand next month. And I'm like, oh, good for you, man. Good for you. That sounds great. You get it. And then I was working with a bartender like a month later, and he was like, yeah, my best friend just moved to London and he's just having the best time. And I'm like, oh, good for him. Yes, you get it. You know, I'm like, oh, yeah. I want to be doing that. That sounds great. And then I'm like, what's stopping me? Like, truly, what's stopping me? And at that point, it was like my health coaching company had just started. So I was still wedding planning on the side. Teaching yoga has always been something that I just love. And don't do full time, but here and there, and it just brings me joy. But I, you know, it's like, I could teach yoga anywhere. I can bring my health coaching company anywhere. Wedding planning, I can kind of set that off on the shelf because it's not bringing me as much joy anymore. And I brought it up to my husband, and I was like, you know, we were living in Austin, Texas at the time, which we loved. And I was like, what's stopping us from doing something like this? That it's uncomfortable and it's fun. Like, I always think I'm a very impulsive person, which is good and bad at times. But I'm like, let's just go for it. If it fails, or, you know, fails, if we fail, whatever that means, we just come back and we restart.
So
he trusted me. But that was then, it was in 2000. It was 2016, we decided to take the jump. And so we kind of had a year to plan things out. We found our home here. We, started the plan, started the move.
Wow.
So.
Wow. Okay. I guess when you hear people, they take that big launch, you're like, what was the initiation of that? You know, like even having your eyes open to that, which I think is really interesting. It's seeing people that are actually moving in a way where they're finding something new that feels uncomfortable to the normal person who's living a very, what looks like a steady, stable life, to be like, no, I'm just gonna do this other thing. And that can be really inspiring to some, and it can be very scary to others. But it sounds like it was very inspiring to you.
A little scary for sure. There was the first night, I remember. The very first night we stayed in our house, we live in a Nika house. It's a very traditional house. And the house hadn't been lived in a while. How do you explain like a true Nika house without like being in one? You know, there's bars on windows. There's it, not in a scary way. There's just life here, as you know, but there's no air conditioning. The beds are just flat and simple, and like we're in our bedroom, and it's essentially just like a bed and a dresser, and the mattress feels like cardboard to us after coming from our United States like comfortable like a 7-layer mattress, right?
Totally.
And I'm laying there just like, oh, and I just feel I feel some ants crawling over me, and I'm like, what the hell did we just do? And my eyes are just like wide open to the ceiling of like, what did we just do? Are we okay? Did we make the right decision? We still ask ourselves that, like, did we make the right decision? But I guess that's just life. I don't know.
Yeah. Wow. That's very, that is, yes. And I think Nicaragua either, I heard somebody say it once, that Nicaragua either like holds you in and she holds you tight, or it's just like she just pushes you back up, like you don't belong here. And I definitely feel like I felt both of those things when being there.
It's very humbling. Very, very humbling country to live in, to be in, to and every single level. And it will besides humble you, it will kind of bring you down into the core of in my opinion, of who you are. When we first moved here, someone had told me, wherever you go, there you are. And I really find that to be true, because no matter what you're facing in any other country you're in or job, you're going to move yourself somewhere else to a different career, a different environment. You're going to meet yourself exactly as you were the person before. 100%. So you're still facing your own inner demons, but just and here it was like my inner demons in just a harsher environment. So it was like, oh, wow. Very eye-opening. But I always recommend it to everyone. Just like go get uncomfortable somewhere and find yourself.
Yes. There is a thing about, I think, being in a space that's so uncomfortable, you don't have those like the cushinesses of life that you would normally have in our North American lifestyles, is that you don't have the distractions that come with that either. I think when you're living a constant rapid life, you can really avoid this inner part of you, like you said, like your inner demons or your inner voice, or you can really silence that by all of the distractions that are so easy to grab hold of because they're so quick and readily available. Whereas in Nicaragua, if anybody who experiences living in a space like Nicaragua, if you want to do something, it's going to take time. If you want anything built or made, or if you want to buy something or really anything, it just takes a lot longer than you would anticipate. So it works on your patience, which what happens when you have that like long space, there's a lot of time that is expanded. So there's room, a lot of silence in between those spaces. You're not constantly purchasing. There's no Amazon. There's there's none of that stuff. Right. So it's not, there's nothing quick about it. So it really elongates the process, which in there allows for so much more stillness. And people have come to visit us with like, wow, it's uncomfortable.
Yes.
Not because the heat. Yeah, that's one thing. But what's uncomfortable is the silence and the stillness that most of us aren't used to in our regular life. That we're like, oh, now I'm dealing with me. And that's what I really found in Nicaragua.
Yes, that's a great point. That stillness is deafening, right? Mm-hmm. And we hadn't, I think it was after 2020, we hadn't visited the States for 3 years because of, flying and everything. And after we visited after 3 years, we were so overwhelmed by being in the city, not necessarily of the hustle and bustle, but the constant marketing and promotions that are in your face, whether it's you turn on the radio, someone's selling something, you look at a billboard, someone's selling something, every single business that you look around that you look at is trying to sell you something. And I wanted to go into like the shell. Like, oh my gosh, I don't want to buy anything. Leave me alone. And it was just, but here is, you just don't get any of that. There's nothing promoting you to kind of the shackles of commercialism. And I appreciate that. I really appreciate that there's no Amazon down here, because I would be using it, and I'm glad that I don't get to.
Right. There's no buying on impulse in Nicaragua. You're not in, that's just not happening. Like we wanted to get some chairs made. Yeah. That took 8.5 weeks to get a chair made. It was like, that's going to take some time. You're like, okay, if I was at home, I would have bought a chair and a rug and a carpet, like in a picture and 5 plants in that same time,
And,
like,
and 2-day delivery at your house.
Exactly. Where this is like, okay, that's going to be a while. You want some chandeliers? Yeah, we'll see in 12 weeks. Like, all right.
Exactly.
You become very comfortable with less and content with less, which is a beautiful thing to learn when you don't come from that type of culture. Like I, you know, things on demand.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. But back to what you were saying originally, like, hey, this was this yes. big part that I thought was going to be the biggest part of our change, but then there was actually more.
Yes. So yeah, moving here was a big in the moment. And then I went to, I don't know if you're into astrology, but I was gifted this astrology reading when we went to visit the States. I think it was in 2018. And a friend gifted me this, and I went to see this this wonderful woman, and she told me that my Saturn return was coming, which at that point I had no idea what that meant. And she just essentially said, like, between the age of 29 and 31, you're going to have the biggest shift of your entire life. And she said, just lean into it, be open to it, and it's going to break you. And I was like, oh, cool. Great. So anyways, it was a few years before this was supposed to come. And so I kind of forgot about it. And, you know, taking it with a grain of salt, appreciating her energy in the reading and moving on, right? And and you know, my 29th year came and normal. And my 30th year came and I turned 30 in 2020. Granted, 2020 was a big shift for everyone in the world. But that wasn't the shift that she was talking about. And your Saturn return is a part in your life, again, based on your birthday, that it, again, if you believe in astrology, is that is supposed to be a big turning, a big shift in your life. And so mine just happened to be at this time. And so it was during 2020, as many people's careers kind of slowed or they got laid off, my client intake began to lessen. And so I found myself just kind of twiddling my thumbs and looking around this small touristy town with no tourists and seeing that there's so many street animals that are not being cared for. And there's no veterinarian in town, and there's no tourists. A lot of tourists would give food and give some level of care to these animals. And our neighbors, who are Nicaraguan, they live in a tin home, dirt floor, really sweet, wonderful people. Their perspective on having pets is very different than ours. So they had five dogs, and in 1 year, all five dogs died of preventable causes. One died in my arms, shaking from distemper and having a heart attack. And I grew really attached to that dog. And so in 2020, I just kept seeing their animals pass away violently from these preventable causes. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what can I do? And walking the streets, is there were no people, but all you saw was, you just saw these animals, these street animals everywhere in really bad conditions. And I'm like, there's no rescue here. There's no one helping. I don't have a background in this, but I feel called to help. And I have, I've had this support, a women's group circle. We have a new moon circle every month. We've had it now for the past 5 years. And I reached out to them and I was like, ladies, I'm feeling this deep calling to help. And, you know, I need some level of support and tell me that I could do it. And of course, all of them were like, yes, yes. And so I, my idea was just raise a few dollars to give some vaccines and to get some food for the animals, and maybe like make, you know, sometimes you see when you travel, there's like some dog bowls and you can refill it. And that was kind of my idea. It exploded exponentially from there. So it was in, I think, November 2020. I had reached out to a few people who had helped animals in the past in San Juan, and they were like, hey, reach out to this girl named Marley. She really loves animals too. And I didn't know Marley. I was like, okay, cool. Reached out to her. We had coffee at Ding Repair. And I was like, hey, I don't know you, but do you want to be my business partner? And do you want to start this animal rescue with me? And she's like, yeah, sure.
Oh my gosh.
We had no idea what we were in for. And so we started like, it was like at the table, we started the Facebook page. And it was, we had our first like rescue. It was like a mom with these puppies. We had our first rescue and, you know, we brought on, this local guy who also loved animals that wanted to help. And like, we had no idea what we were doing. No idea. We had no money. We had like, so we started with a Facebook page and an Instagram page with the intention of a small, just a small little thing. Small. In a few weeks, it exploded. Like we had, I mean, we would open our messages to like 50 messages a day of people asking for help for this animal, that animal. Look over here. Like there's this, I need help. I need veterinary care. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what are we doing? And it was like one, of course, it was like a few weeks after we started the rescue, things were just like the ball was rolling. And I was playing on a women's soccer team, football team here, and I tore my meniscus in half. Like it was gone. And so we're like running around rescuing these animals in the streets, and I'm like hobbling on crutches. It was such a sight. And Marley and I look back at that time of just like the pure insanity. You know, we had started a PayPal and a Venmo, and there were some people donating, and we were like, oh, it was now December. We're like, we need to, and the biggest thing. So Marley and I were working on this rescue every day, all day. And then on top of that, at night to raise money, we were baking cookies and brownies to sell at the farmer's market. So twice a week, we would then spend our nights at the farmer's market selling cookies and brownies for like a dollar. And
any way just to like create some sort of income to compensate.
Anything at all. And so we quickly realized, we were kind of asking volunteers to help us with transport from San Juan to Rivas, which is about a 30-40 minute drive depending on where you go, and that was the closest veterinary care. And it was really difficult to ship these animals, and sometimes we needed emergency care, sometimes we couldn't find transport, and we were just stuck with this like dying, bleeding animal or an animal that needed help. And we couldn't do anything about it. So Marley and I were like, yeah, we're just two women that don't have a background. Well, Marley has a animal education background. She's more advanced than I am in this. But we're like, how about we open up a vet clinic? What?
Why not?
What? Yeah, like there's no vet clinic here, and our rescues need help. And you see all of these families that need help with their animal, and they can't. Most families here just have motos. They can't put their whole dog on a moto and drive all the way to Rivas with the dog. Yeah. So like, and they can't afford a taxi to take their dog all the way to the vet. And then potentially they can't even afford the vet care once they get there. So these animals are just suffering due to the fact that veterinary care was not available, and at a price that they could afford. So Marley and I were like, yeah, let's raise money in December and January to start a vet clinic. So our goal is $10,000, and we had this, I think we still have it somewhere. We made this like this little like, I don't know, flyer. We got a giant piece of paper, and I drew this dog with the Santa Claus hat, and in the dog we created like markers of like $1,000, you fill in the dog. And it was like $5,000, you fill in the dog. It was like $10,000, whatever. And at every single like bake sale we would go to and every event fundraiser we'd go to, we put it up and like fill it in a little more.
That's awesome.
And it was January 25th of 2021 where we found the house to rent that we would then open the vet clinic.
Wow.
And then by March 16th was our grand opening of the vet clinic. So from November to March, we had started an animal rescue and opened up a veterinary clinic in a developing country with no background in doing any of this.
Wow.
So the stress and just the pure insanity, the insanity of it all. Like the stories Marley and I have of just both of us looking at each other, like, what are we doing, is laughable. We look back at those times and we laugh for sure. And within the week that we opened up the veterinary clinic, Marley found out she was pregnant unexpectedly.
Oh, wow.
And so we didn't, like, there's no real financial profit for Marley and I with this job, as you know, everything goes towards the rescues. And so especially at this point, there was just we were running on anything we could have. And so of course Marley needed to go back to the US to make money because she had a baby on the way. Understandable. Yeah. So in May, she needed to leave me for the summer. And so then I was the first year of the veterinary clinic. I was like alone on the ground.
Wow.
And I think every day I called her crying. Every day. Every single day. And I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. That was the year 2021, where it was the first full year of the rescue, first full year of the clinic. That was the year that broke me into a million pieces. And then I had to kind of sprout myself from there.
Wow. And when you say breaking point, can you explain that or describe that a bit more, just as far
sure.
to fully understand?
Yeah, absolutely. So between, let me try and find the correct words here. So running, I guess running one business in general has its challenges. It's full time, and then running two businesses with two separate layers of staff in a language you don't speak fluently.
Right.
Being someone from a different culture, being white, and stepping into a culture that you are trying to help, and not coming off as like you're saving, you don't want to come off as a white person stepping in saying our cult, this is better this way, we need to implement our culture into your culture. I didn't want to do that. That was stepping over a boundary that I didn't think was appropriate. And all I wanted to do was help. But when you add in staff that is now working, you know, under you, I wasn't planning on being a boss of anyone. I didn't want to be a boss of anyone. And then being a boss of a different culture, again, in a language I didn't speak fluently, was a challenge, just such a great depth of a challenge in you know, having meetings with your staff in front of you, and you're trying to communicate, and you're also trying to communicate from a different background and a different perspective on what, you know, animal care truly is, and you're both aliens from a different planet is how it feels. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the biggest challenges, and still is a big challenge. My Spanish is definitely better now. However, I still run into the barrier of, am I crossing a boundary I shouldn't be? And am I insulting someone by being this white woman, stepping in, seeing this neglected, abused animal, and speaking to a local saying, hey, this isn't right, without saying my way is better than yours. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
That's a big challenge. And it still is. But that was something I wasn't aware that that was going to be an issue. On top of that, just being a boss in general of other people, maybe isn't my forte. I don't think I have the heart for it, in a way of like, I just want everyone to be happy and to enjoy their work and to, you know, to love everyone. And yeah. You have to be a little bit of a harder soul to be a boss. I don't know if I have that in me, but I've learned it over, it's been 3.5 years now, and I've had to step up into that role, and that's been a really big challenge for me personally. But another, I mean, maybe one of the biggest breaking points is when you first step into animal work, which maybe other animal workers, maybe other animal workers know and can relate, is what you see. And what you see over and over and over again. And it used to break me. It used to make me cry. It used to keep me up at night, of the deep level of animal abuse and neglect that you see, from you seeing them physically beat by humans and seeing the action take place, or the aftermath. And it's just completely heartbreaking to try and comprehend that we as humans have the opportunity to take care of such beautiful creatures that we have domesticated over thousands and thousands of years. We've chosen to domesticate these animals to be our companions. Yes. And they can't live freely on their own without our help and our love. And yet we treat, you know, some of us treat them this way. And it's also then coming from a place of not judging that human, right? So like, you go to a house where someone is called and said, hey, my neighbor is beating their dog, or whatever the case may be. So you physically go to that house and you see the way they live, and you see, you know, that their family obviously doesn't have a lot of food. Their family doesn't have clean running water. Their family, you know, doesn't have enough money to buy beans and rice. And you see this abused dog, and your heart wants to scream at these people for treating the dog this way. And you have to take a breath and take a moment to understand that there's such a deeper issue going on here than just the dog, that you can't, no matter how hard you try, coming from a privileged background and a privileged lifestyle from North America, I can never understand. And so that's also a part that breaks me and broke me within the first year. I had to create a little bit of a wall, in a way, an emotional wall. Yeah. To when now, when I see an animal come in that's been neglected or abused, I feel for it, but I'm not, you know, bawling my eyes out anymore. Yeah. I'm like, okay, let's go into action. What can we do here? And the biggest change that I think you can make is always education. No matter where you are in the world, education for children, education for adults, education for anyone is the base of change. And personally, is I think education is key. You know, going to families, we go to schools and we talk about animal care and to like the little ones, so the little ones can go home and be like, hey, you know, we should be giving our dog clean water every day. We should be, you know, making sure our dog has this food. We shouldn't be giving our dog chicken bones, you know, like just some things that you instill in these little ones that they go home and they say, hey, I love my dog. And I learned some ways in which we can care for it a little better. And going to these families too, one-on-one, and you know, coming up to the father of the family and trying to speak to him and say, hey, I'm not here to judge. I'm not here to scold you. I'm here to help. And how can I best help this animal? And while also helping your family. So it's a deep process. Mentally,
it's like
physically, emotionally.
And how, like, I love what you're doing, because you're going to the ground level and you're teaching. Because if you can teach, you're right, when we don't know, you don't know what you don't know.
Exactly. So
if it's always been doing it the same way, then you just continue to do it the same way. But if you can teach littles, now imagine 20, 30 years from now, those littles are teaching their littles what you have. And it's starting to, it will trickle down over time and it change the way that animal care is being happening in specifically in that area, which is something that they wouldn't have if you didn't do the first thing and be like, hey, Marley, do you want to like do this thing? You know? And then two girls are like, yeah, we can do this thing. And then, you know, you're off to the races.
Yeah.
And before you realize it, you're like neck deep and you're like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Which is like, I think that's the beauty in sometimes when we're just, we have a passion and we're just like, oh, like this, the passion is burning so deeply and brightly within us that we're not looking at all of it, because if we did, we would never have done it.
Right. You know,
it's an act of courage that is just like this, it's ignited, but it's beyond that. It's a passion that just leads you all the way through that you're like, oh no, we can do this. Had you known everything you know now, it might have been a bit more of a bitter, the leap would have been like, okay, we're leaping into some hot water. Do we want to do this?
You know? My gosh. Yeah. I, you know, there are some days where I'm like, what would happen if we just stopped, you know, because some days it would be, you know, I think to myself, I'm like, oh, it would just be, life would be so much easier if it didn't exist. And that's just a real thought. I wouldn't stop, but to my family and my parents that live in the United States and don't really comprehend, the depth of my life down here. I was talking to my mom, I don't know, I think last fall, and sitting down with her and trying to dive in a little bit into it and just telling her, you know, like the difficulty of living down, the challenge of living down here to begin with as a baseline. Mm-hmm. And then you add running two businesses on top of it is a little crazy. Like, it's crazy. Don't recommend it to anyone. But I told her, like, you know, you think by starting something like an animal rescue, you would feel so fulfilled and loved and, you know, and I do, I feel fulfilled, and I feel like this is what I'm supposed to be doing, but I've never been so hated and so loved at the same time.
Wow.
And I remember sitting at the table with her and just crying because I hadn't realized, I hadn't spoken those words out loud before. It's true. There are so many people that don't like me or like how I'm doing things on a level of like hatred. And then there's people that, of course, you see in the street in this small town, and they're like, oh, I love what you're doing. Thank you for doing what you're doing. And that like makes my heart whole, and it's so sweet. But yeah. There's that other side where I just didn't, if I would have never started SOS and I would have just kept to myself doing my own life, teaching yoga and doing my health, you know, company and everything, like kind of behind the scenes a little more, I would have never felt those huge polar opposites. And those polar opposites are difficult. Like I've, you know, there's been, it's crazy, but you know, in the past 3 years, like Marley and I have received threats. And we've received an insurmountable amount of love. There's no, I feel like in this industry, there's no middle ground. It's a high, it's a really big high and a really big low. And I think ultimately that's what you get for taking risks in life is you jump and by jumping and going after your passion, you get this, you know, this really big high of like, you wouldn't have been able to feel this high, this fulfillment if you never jumped. And you know that at some point you will feel, you know, a stumble. You'll be crawling at some point, and you'll get back up and you'll be back at that high. And if you never took that risk, you'd just be in that middle ground.
Right.
And so it's a trip. It's a trip.
Yeah. it reminds me of when you're talking about it, it reminds me of like the roads in Nicaragua. They have some of the most beautiful highways.
Yes.
And they have some of the worst roads you'll ever drive on. It's like
insurpassable.
This shouldn't be a road, right? No, it's a road.
To like a main city, no, and it's like take a right. You're like, this is a chicken coop. Like what right am I taking here?
Exactly, right? And that it sounds like your journey has been sounds much like the trips and the unexpected turns you'll take just adventuring Nicaragua. It sounds like your journey has been very much the way that Nicaragua is. There's a lot of unexpected like turns and highs and like absolute moments of aha and magic, and then ones where you're on your knees and you're crying and you're just like, what?
Yeah.
You know, like it's incredible. Well, I had no idea that when I met you, you were at the beginning of some of this. Like it was, I didn't realize. Cause I think, I don't even know when we got out there. I think it was 2021.
Yeah. You saw me, saw me in my shell. You met me in my shell.
Little did I know.
Hi, Janelle. Everything's fine. Everything's fine. And in the background, there's just fire. Like,
constant, your hair's on fire, no one knows.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, wow, what an incredible journey of like courage and inspiration and resilience and heartache, sadness and overwhelming joy. Like I feel like so many words could be thrown at your journey and so many would fit, because there's this like, it sounds like there's just so many extremes of the experience. yeah. the absolute highs and the absolute lows, and knowing that, yeah, like, yeah, you're going into a country where you're just trying to help, but you, that can be viewed so differently depending on who's looking at it. But the work that you do, like, just from my own experience of, like, being there and seeing what you do, and we were taking care of a dog while we were there, as you know, Squish, for a while.
Yeah.
And he got poisoned, and we brought him in, and they were able to help him, and, like, he was – I was so worried because his legs were shaking, and I was, like, he was, like, having troubles walking, and they were, we were able to get him right in, and they were – amazing with him. And that's because that you and Marley went, like, we can do something here in this little town. You know, like, how many dogs and cats and people's hearts have you guys been able to reach because you were able to save somebody that they loved?
Yeah.
And, like, you know, animals are like a family member. They are like one of the kids, and some of the best therapy in the world you can get is can be with a dog and a cat. This is, they are nurturing, and what a beautiful thing that you not only saw that needed to be done, but you, like, did something about it. And that's the thing that I think that many of us get stuck on, ideas we wish we would have done, but we were maybe just too afraid to do.
Yeah,
you're just really inspiring, Delaney.
Thanks.
Yeah, seriously, what an incredible thing that you just did it. I think that's the thing in life where we get stuck sometimes in our own obstacles, in our own heads, and maybe get too caught up in the things that could go wrong instead of being like, I'm just going to blaze ahead and see what comes for me, you know?
Yeah, I do go back to, I'm a very impulsive person, but it does serve me in many ways and not, but I tend to look at things of, you know, hey, I want whatever it is. I want this. I'm interested in this. What's the best thing that could happen? What's the worst thing that could happen? And it's like the worst thing most of the time, whatever you're wanting, the worst thing that can happen isn't that bad. It's not that bad. If you jump, the worst thing is not that bad. But if you do get it, or you even get like a bite of it, that's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah.
And right? That's worth it. And even if it's not the whole, I guess, cake that you're getting and you just get that bite, the next jump you take might be a little more. But also be careful what you manifest, because it could really, really explode. And that's what happened. Like, yeah, let's start an animal rescue. Boom.
We have a veterinarian clinic now.
Yeah.
Wow. You kind of answered my question I was going to ask you. If you were talking to somebody who's like, I'm like, I have this idea, or I feel like I want to try something new, or, but I'm like, have all these like what ifs, what would you tell somebody? I feel like you kind of touched on that just recently, but maybe there's more you want to add to that. If you sound like somebody who's taken a lot of like, we'll see what happens journeys.
Yeah.
And beautiful things have happened, and also hard things have happened. So somebody who's listening to your story being like, wow, I'm thinking about an idea. What would you say to them? What would be something that maybe the secret of,
you know,
knowledge?
I think that anything I've ever done, I think your 20s, a lot of people could say, is an opportunity to just jump and fail and jump and fail and jump and fail. I did a lot of that in my 20s. And I would go after a passion or something that I wanted. And it might happen, it might not happen. But every time I went after something that I really felt a calling for in my heart, whatever that means to you, you think about it over and over again, you journal about it, you pray about it, whatever it is for you, and it keeps coming back. That to me means that that's a calling. That's something that you need to jump towards. And even if it's a jump out of curiosity and you jump back, that's okay. But at least you took a step, you became curious about it and understood if that really is your calling, if that's your dharma, whatever it is to you. There is just what's the worst that can happen?
Mm-hmm.
Money will always come back to you. If it's a financial push towards something, and again, you've thought about it over and over again, you have this like deep calling in your heart, money always comes back. You will always figure it out. There is a beauty. There's a beauty in the struggle of going after your passion. Like you look back at any challenge you've had in your life for a certain extended period of time, you look back and there's, I guarantee everyone has a smile when they look back at a challenge. They're like, oh man, that was something, wasn't it? You know, like with having twins right now, I look at even like the newborn stage. I'm like, thank the Lord we're out of that stage. And I look back and I'm like, I'm laughing. But in that moment, it's hard. But
yeah,
that's, you know, what is life without those jumps? You're just, you live in this stability, which stability is also beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're 80 years old, when you're 90 years old, and you look back at your stability, can you find those really big highs and those really big lows to look back on and say, wow, I went for it. I really lived this life. Mm. I went after my heart and my calling, and I failed a bunch of times and I got back up and I tried again. And at the end of the day, you still have yourself. Maybe you have a partner with you. You have a best friend with you. You have your kids, wherever you're at in your life. At the base of everything, mm-hmm. you're still here
yes.
And you have mm-hmm. this beautiful human to fall back on and be like, oh, wow, okay, coming back home to yourself and being like, oh, I went for it, like high five to yourself.
Totally.
and you know, you're always there. And maybe you have other people to depend on and give you inspiration and comfort too. But it, to me, is just what do you have to lose to the right. deepest reality?
Yeah.
What do you got to lose?
And what do you have to lose when you don't, like when you said, like when you have that nudge being like calling you and something saying like, do this thing, what's the other end of that too, right? And not doing the thing that was calling you.
Right. Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. Yeah. And I think about that too with like travel, which I know you and your family do a lot. And I love following you guys in return too. And just seeing you and your family traveling and going and doing this and that and hopping in a car all together and everyone's smushed and you guys are going on a road trip. Like, I just think it's so cool. But it's like, you know, that's a level of uncomfortability as well of doing those things and going out on those adventures. And I think that's, it's not for everyone, in that kind of lifestyle, but in your own version of that, whatever that is for you, go get uncomfortable. Go get uncomfortable. And in the end, you'll smile. Like, I just promise. I don't know. I'm just like, in the uncomfortability, like there's always like, oh, I'm so uncomfortable. This is like overwhelming and also kind of fun.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyways.
It's met with both, right? Where you're just like, there is this surge of energy though. I was just talking to my friend who's been talking about pursuing teaching yoga, and she's a nurse, and she's like one of these people that just has this beautiful energy of like love around her. You just can't feel it, but she's just wanted to do this thing. So she's like, she went to a class and she did like the grounding kind of meditation at the beginning of it. And she's like, I just hit this, like this spot, like this, like this, it's like that hum, like that magic, that thing that you're just like, even if you don't think that you can do it, when you, like you said, lean to the thing that's calling you, lots of times you'll find that you're very well equipped for doing the thing that's been calling you.
Yes.
You just maybe couldn't see yourself in it, but then you do it and you're like, oh no, like this is well with my soul. Like this fuels me in a way that nothing I've done ever has. And like, if you don't take those little steps of courage, even if you feel like, I don't know if I have what it takes to do this, but then you do it and the spark happens. It's almost like you let something like a little light go on in this room or like a firework. And then soon they're all just sparking. Like they're all just, it's like your own little firework show inside your heart.
Oh, that's such a good way of saying it. Yes. I mean, whatever you believe is like the universe will always have your back. You know, whoever is in your soul, it's always going to be there to back you up. And like I said, when you put a pen to paper and you write down your spark, I love that you put that, like that spark within your heart, and you write down that spark, you say that spark out loud, you pray about it, whatever it is, you just put that out there into the universe and it's going to have your back. And if you keep like taking those steps, boom, like those fireworks just like start going off. And then who knows what can happen for you after that. I mean, it just it keeps allowing you to step forward into your truth. And I feel like a lot of people hide from that out of just the fear of what can happen and the fear of their own success. Because success is it puts you out into the open and it pushes you again into that uncomfortability, whatever success means to you, but your own personal success. A lot of people are afraid of that and what that means. And I think that deters them from really trying.
Yeah, because we can oftentimes see our own inability to not be able to do something. We oftentimes don't see ourselves the way others do. We can see a much smaller version of ourselves and not realize of our capability, and then climbing into that and being like, oh, this is gonna be one heck of a growing pain, this whole thing. But that is life, and that's the beauty about living, is that whether we decide to ignore that calling or we decide to move into that, it's either way there's going to be an levels of uncomfortability in those seasons. But I think your story is so inspiring, and you're just like, just get uncomfortable. Like, it's okay to be uncomfortable, you know, because I think in not being uncomfortable, it's really easy to get stuck.
Yes.
I say this all the time. What traveling does to me is it keeps me young, because I have to always learn something, whether it's a new language just to get by, or whether it's learning how to drive on the opposite side of the road, or whether it's learning how to drive on Nika roads, or whether it's like trying to find a grocery store or whatever it is. There's no robot mode because I never know my surroundings well enough. And if I do, even those surroundings are going to be uncomfortable because they're not like the ones I came from and grew up in. So it's that it does keep you young. There's different things that in life that will drive you to like continue to learn. And a lot of times it is putting ourselves in a very uncomfortable place.
That's
a lot of our learning is done.
Another great perspective of traveling and keeping yourself young. And on your toes, constantly on your toes.
Yeah, forever on your toes. If you were to think about life right now, sure, there's probably a few, but is there something in your life right now that immediately comes to you and you think of, this brings me joy?
My babies. Yeah. That was like the first thing that came into my brain. although they're not sleeping right now at night and I have no energy, but like I'm a zombie currently, but they do, they bring me joy. And we just traveled recently as a family of four to Spain for 2 weeks with our 5-month-olds. And that brought me so much joy. And that was insane and crazy and uncomfortable. And my husband and I were like on edge sometimes. But looking back at that uncomfortability, it's like, oh my gosh, how much fun was that in the craziness of it all? Like that brings me joy as well. So looking at those things and then doing what I'm doing every day of helping animals brings me joy. Yeah. Brings me heartache and joy.
And joy. Can't have the one without the other.
Like, can't, no. Nope. Nope.
Oh my gosh. You, honestly, I am so honored that you came and took the time in the midst of children and zombie mode. And I know early motherhood with one baby being in zombie mode, I don't know at times two. So I commend you for just being like, yeah, let's do this. But also for like the life that you're living and the inspiration that you are to people that maybe are near or far, those who come through, you know, San Juan and they're just like, I want to see what's happening SOS. And they realize that you started it and you're doing this thing and you didn't just think about something, but you actually did it. And that is so inspiring. So I really, really appreciate you being here and also for letting us be a part of what you guys are doing there. Like it was such an honor to be a part of what you guys do there. And
our pleasure. Thank you for wanting to be a part of it. Your family was such a help volunteering and you know, you guys saw the inside of the craze a lot of the time. So it's a zoo.
But it's going and it's happening and things are happening and pets, dogs and finding new homes and they're getting taken care of and there's beautiful fostering families that are like I've met so many people that are just joining you guys along for this journey and along for this adventure and I think that's the beautiful thing too when you find your passion and you lean into it, there will be people that'll generally join you on that journey. It might not be right away, but people will align with your passion and they'll find a way to join you in that if there's room, you know. And I think you guys have done a beautiful job of making room for that. So yeah, thank you so much for being on Naked and taking the time to do this.
Thanks for having
me.
Your
little babes are awake.
Of course. They are. No, they're over there, but they're being sweet.
Yeah.
They're being sweet. After a nap, they're all
being
happy.
So patient. Aw. They're like, we're just being so patient with mom.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I hope that you have a beautiful rest of your day. I think you're just starting your day over there.
Yeah.
Starting mine. Yeah. But I hope that, things go well. You said you were kind of branching out and doing some new things. At the beginning, you talked about SOS. You guys are expanding. Is that what did I hear you?
Yes. Right? The goal forever has been to create our own separate rescue center. So right now, the vet clinic and the rescue are kind of together in one. The rescue runs out of the vet clinic. So we have some of our rescues inside the clinic and we kind of split it half and half between the two businesses. But the goal is to have our own center. So we have some land that's been donated to us by a wonderful family here. And we have kind of architectural plans to create a real rescue center. We were supposed to kind of kick off fundraising last year, but I got pregnant with the twins and, you know, life took kind of a little bit of a turn. It's still the plan, but it's just been slowed down a little bit. But we, in the next, year or two, we want to fundraise the money to build this beautiful rescue center. It's going to be, I think, 8 or 9 buildings We're going to have a full community center there, puppy house, adult dog house, cat house. There'll be like a cat co-working. Wow. It's going to be, there'll be a whole volunteer area where you can come and stay for like a week or two and volunteer. And
so it's going to be awesome. You guys.
It's going to be awesome.
That's amazing.
You just have to fundraise that money to get there. But
okay.
It's,
yeah.
It's in there. Talk about like another jump, right? But like,
yeah. Yeah. Just these leaps.
Just keep leaping.
Just keep leaping. Wow, that is exciting. What a beautiful thing to be leaning towards, you know? And knowing that that's coming, you have the land now and you can dream and start creating plans for that. Wow, I'm very excited for you guys.
We'll keep you updated.
Can't wait to come back and come and be a part of that.
Yay!
But yeah, until then, I hope that you guys are doing well, and I love seeing your journeys. You. And so, yeah, thanks for sharing. I love seeing your little people grow. They're so adorable and so sweet. And thank you for being here and for sharing your journey and sharing your story. I know it's going to inspire a lot of people. You don't always realize who's listening and what person needed to hear that today. So thank you for taking the time to share it authentically and real. Yeah.
Of course. Beautiful. My pleasure. Thank you for having me and thinking that I would be fun to talk to. How cool.
Of course. You've been on my mind for a while. I'm like, I need to reach out to her.
Thanks for doing that.
But of course, have an amazing rest of your day. Big hugs from all of us to you guys there at SOS as well.
Thanks, Janelle. Ciao. Say hi to your fam.
I will. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you for joining us. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please take a moment to subscribe and leave a review wherever you get your podcast goodness. This way you'll never miss out on any future episodes, plus it really helps us. And if you want to share your favorite episode with a friend, that would be absolutely incredible. This goes a long way. If you'd like to join Naked by sharing part of your story, just leave us a message on Instagram or email us at nakedwithjanelle@gmail.com. Also, a big thanks to my son, Mikkel, who is the best cheerleader and maybe one of the biggest believers in Naked, and also produces and edits all our podcasts. I am beyond grateful for him and very aware that I couldn't do this on my own. Thank you so much for tuning in and for being here.